like, bruh, I need a camera with me at all times. You know, because the crazy shit be happening to me.
You know you can get like a camera around your neck.
I need to get that because I would like, I really want to document, start documenting my life. I just didn't know what would be the best way to do it.
Or one with cheap print.
Like, it's like soccer, bro.
It's weird.
Life is like a lot of bone falls and then like,
boom. Oh no, goal!
Like, you just be waiting for some shit to happen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm like, no. Wait a long time to your team get scored.
Yeah, man, I did terrible this past Saturday at a Twisted Line. You know, I did a comedy show. I don't feel like I did very well. And I'm still just like, I don't even want to leave the house right now. You know, what happened? Yeah. What is my life?
Fuck. That's just one crowd.
One crowd. What do y'all do artistically besides clean up shoes with toothbrush? Matthew?
Oh, I used
to. Did you ride your bike to Kenner?
I'll tell you what, son. I'll tell you what.
You rode your bike to Bell Cheese, huh? Come on now.
Naval Academy? Did they run a train on you, Matthew? What happened?
You ride your bike on the train tracks. Well, when they don't have no car.
That's actually not what I was asking, but yes. Matthew, go. What? The floor is yours.
Oh, no, I used to play piano and paint with my dad a lot, so.
Mm-hmm.
Used to do that, so.
You don't paint anymore?
No, I mean, I kind of lost out of it, because, like, I don't have a piano to play, like, I don't have a piano in my room. I used to have a piano in my house, and my dad had a buku paint. Like, we painted with acrylic. But I always wanted to learn how to paint with oil because I always thought I liked the effect. But the oil takes forever to dry. Like, it's like you do one little thing on it, and then 6 hours later, you can do another thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you have to be really good to actually get to that. But I used to paint, my dad used to paint waterfowl, so I would paint waterfowl as well.
And what happened to your dad? What's going on with your dad?
What? Oh, he still paints.
He paints?
Yeah,
he still paints. Dropped off the paint wagon?
Yeah, I dropped off the paint wagon. I decided to explore other ventures.
Nate, what about you, homie?
What?
Artistic adventures. What's going on? You're a young gun. You're up at Donald's house, you know? Because he's a good influence on you. He can keep your mind straight. I know what's going on. After high school, it could get dangerous on the streets, you know? People get shot around the corner. You need some kind of artistic expression. You were around when I was talking about this with your homies.
This dude's fucking.
What the fuck? This dude just.
You fucking funny, bro.
Artistic expression, Nathaniel.
You know what I'm real good at?
What?
Everything.
Whoa.
I completely fucking said. One thing I'm good at is fucking talking.
Mm-hmm.
And playing a game.
Playing a game?
Fucking Call of Duty, all that shit. I be
Call of Duty?
Love it, that shit.
Mm-hmm. Do you think you can win an international tournament against Japanese people on a diet of sushi and edamame? And Call of Duty? Whoa, sorry. I don't want a harsh no vibes going on in this bitch.
What, bro?
I'm just waiting for my turn to come around.
Artistic expression.
I used to dance in middle school and growing up. And I used to draw. But now I'm a mathematician.
So. Whoa. Do the same skills apply?
Sort of.
I mean, I'm sure, like, certain, like, personality traits, mm-hmm. like, dedication to it. I don't think this, I think that's more of a choice.
Yo, those Nikes be on fleeks, huh? Why are you scrubbing? You're scrubbing the shit out of those Nikes. They look fine.
Oh, it's just because, like,
you don't want to.
Just give them, right?
You know?
I see them.
They
I'm
look wider.
This one. You see that
they
one?
Look cleaner.
Yeah.
You can tell the right. difference.
You don't want to embarrass yourself on the basketball court by having some scrubbed up Nikes.
Bruh, you have no idea how adventurous this week has been and why I'm cleaning this shoe.
Adventurous?
This is the second, like, let me tell you this, bro.
That shoe go to Kenner?
Let me tell you this.
Oh, yeah.
Where that shoe been, homie?
Now he doesn't ride his bike. He cycles.
Oh, steroids.
No.
Cycling on.
I'm montar on my bike. So there we go.
Hmm.
Montar. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
That's what I do.
Montar. Is that a?
That was a good job. Montar.
Montar.
I've
been talking to Mohammed all day. I've been leaving voicemails and I was answering shit. Won't get back to me.
I'm sure they're funny as fucks.
They do me up, Mohammed.
He landed home. I said hi to him, but he got off the plane. Then I smoked some marijuana in front of him. He left. He doesn't want to get rehooked on the wacky tobacco. So then, he visited me today, but I was taking a nap. I Uber drove early this morning till like 6 or something. I don't know when the fuck I was doing that, but I was tired. I took a nap. I wanted a second wind to go out later. And, you know, I tried to get in touch with Mohammed, but then I kept getting his weird Saudi associate. Only Saudis pick up the phone now when you talk to Mohammed. I think there's trouble afoot.
Associate is the word? Call me.
Yeah, I think they're at the boot trying to pick up teenagers.
Is he a teenager?
Yeah, he's 18. He's probably got a fake ID, though. And he's probably telling everybody that he's an international business lawyer. But
that's so extreme.
What's your name again, sweetie?
Camera. What's your name?
Eric.
Harry?
Eric.
How the fuck are you?
Eric?
Yeah.
Okay, Eric.
All right, Cameron. What's going on? Are you going to UNL? What are you studying, sweetie?
Math. I'm going to be a senior in the fall.
A senior getting your bachelor's in mathematics? Whoa, look at you. What's going on afterward? You getting your master's and?
Probably going to get, like, in this rotation, in a rotation program at, like, an insurance firm.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere, hopefully, like, Towers Watson or somewhere like that. And just pretty much get that experience. And I'm going to obviously get paid and hopefully have a job there. And then go back and get my master's and just pass more exams to be an actuary.
What's an actuary?
A mathematician who runs numbers for different insurance companies. Mm-hmm. Like, they help with retirement plans and life insurance and car insurance, stuff like that.
So you're like, hey, this many people, their bodies explode on the highway.
Yeah.
So, well, it costs $500 to have insurance. Because every 10,000 person, I have to pay $500 million to. So
exactly.
When your head explodes, it's like very expensive for us.
Yep.
That's a nice ass business to get into. That's I might start an insurance business.
You want to insure heads exploded?
I want an insurance business. That don't sound like a bad idea, huh?
Mm-hmm.
It's intense, but
you just gotta have probably
sound like money. A pyramid scheme of like, hey, don't fucking kill anybody.
Like, what are they, like, yeah. Think about that. That's a genius idea. That's like a bank or insurance company. Like,
they just sit back and they have to write like one check every 9 months. And it seems like they're collecting a bunch of checks, right?
And you gotta give like 3 out every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody fucks up. But they don't even, they try not to even insure like this mm-hmm. shit.
Nathan, you get this whole insurance right here? What's going on? You getting your driver's license soon?
You pull it out full.
Whoa, you got it already. You have insurance. Oh my god. This guy's got credentials over here. Can't drink yet, but he can drive.
Actually, I can't.
Do you think you got to UNL?
Yeah. Get my master's in screenwriting. I got my undergrad in creative writing. And then I realized that didn't really qualify me to do anything.
Mm.
So I was like, if I get my master's in screenwriting, maybe can teach it and scam my way into selling one day, maybe.
Yep.
What you want to make, like movies?
Yeah, like write movies and then other people make them.
You gonna let me be the stuff?
Whoa. Like,
that's my.
Are you gonna have a strong performance on my podcast? And really break it down for everybody, Nathan. What's your shooting star in the distance? What hopes and dreams do you have? What are you going towards?
That's my biggest dream.
Mm-hmm. On a lot of shows and shit.
Man, the egg shit in LA, bro. How you didn't go to no auditions ever when you was in LA?
Yeah, but I don't want to. I don't know. I didn't feel like I was like, you know, an actor or something. I kind of felt like I was more of like a writer that could produce his own stuff.
They were fun. If the characters just be the people, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
If you was a character in the movie, like if you was somebody's roommate in the movie, or you was like the guy sleeping on the couch.
Who the dude that played on Click?
What about the king of everybody? Why do I got to be the dude on the couch?
The egghead dude?
Yeah.
Disrespect.
Ben Sanders or some shit.
I'm the homeless
dude. Ben Stiller.
You could be the next Hellhunter. The dude that played on Click. Man. Or Click. You know
what
I'm
saying? Oh, Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler.
Is this guy? You could be the next him.
You try
Adam. Now, if you were to guess my religion, what would you guess it to be, Nathan? If you were to guess my religion, what would be the first thing that would pop in your head? Rumors.
Oh, no.
So I'm from New Jersey, and my accent is like this. I'm actually Catholic, but people, as soon as they hear my accent, they're like, "You're for sure Jewish."
People are
like, "Oh, you shave your head to hide the curls?"
Are you Catholic?
Hide them. I mean, I was raised Catholic, but I don't. I'm kind of like agnostic right now. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Answer the question.
No.
It's a yes or no question.
That would be a straight up no.
Oh.
I've been circumcised, but I don't know. It wasn't a ritual. That was done by a weird doctor.
I'm hoping all of y'all are circumcised. But I know some people...
Whoa.
You ran into one of them, bro.
I've never ran into one of them.
The anteater, you've heard about it? How disgusting it is. It's like,
yes.
It's like, can that pick up a peanut or what? Is this going to make love to me or... Spat water at my face. Is it gonna root around in my vagina for insects?
Mm.
Or is this just fucking me? Mm. I don't know what that is.
I see why you document your life.
Fucking right.
You know.
Are you using it for anything? Or like you just listen to it every day, like I
don't.
I have a podcast. Yeah,
two jobs.
You're getting two jobs.
Hopefully, American Eagle and Smoothie King.
American Eagle, Smoothie King.
Yeah.
You're divested of multiple interests. What's your favorite smoothie, homie?
Just a job like this. You want me to tell you how it came down?
Shit on the application, bro.
Give me a little mic.
The mic's here. No. That's the proper distance. Trust me. It can hear everything you say. What do you want to say?
I'm hungry as fuck.
You're hungry as fuck?
Well, all right.
So you want a smoothie?
It's a fire shit. So look. It's me and V, right?
Mm-hmm.
We going. We went to the Riverwalk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we was going to look at some places. We went seeing camera. We did our app. We were like, gucci, gucci, goo. And then we went to the food court. And then that's when V was like, let's split up. So I'm like, all right. I went to Smoothie King. Dude left his wallet. He was walking away. I picked up the wallet. I said, sir, we forgot your wallet. And I gave it to him. And the manager watching the whole time. So we were like, you want a job? Come on. That's when I was like, give V an application. And he just came talking to us. He gave us a number, bro. Like, we got an interview tomorrow.
Wow. That's what's going on. I'm
like a fucking bystander. Like, what the fuck, man? Fucking rap. I was just like, fuck, like, the manager, we sitting there doing the abs on the table. In food court, we got a table doing the abs. He comes sit down at the table. The manager, he like, what's up? I'm 25 years old. I'm the youngest general manager in the country at Smoothie King. I'm looking at me like, what the fuck you did? Like, damn. Yeah, he's like talking boo-boo shit like, I like dudes like y'all. I'm like, thank you. My reply was, it's good that you tell dudes like us that you like them, but we gonna keep being like us.
Mm-hmm. You need encourage us
to keep being like us, exactly. Right? But I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna reiterate what the fuck. You come down sitting talking to me about that, I'm like, all right, okay, go back to you. Mm-hmm. Smiling, like, all right, y'all, send me y'all information on the card, man. Make sure they put that application in the right place. I'm like,
man, text that boy. That boy said, I got an interview tomorrow. You got an interview Friday.
See y'all later.
All right, fool, check me up. Go follow me on Instagram, Rico7. Go follow me on Twitter, Rico7. You hear me, yeah.
Rico7.
Cut that out.
No, Rico7. Well,
keep the Instagram and Twitter and don't.
How much work do you want me to do post this? If you're saying shit, that's what I'm putting in there and stuff.
Oh, fuck.
Whoa.
We're ready.
We're continuing on. Sound check. Yeah, that'll do. We're continuing on with the Highway Diary podcast. I'm here with my main motherfucker, Terry motherfucking Scott. In denial up in this bitch.
That's me. In serious denial.
So you are a self-made man. I want to say that, you know?
Yeah, kind of like in a Godfather way type of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're a made man.
Yes, I am.
So,
legitimately speaking, though.
So let me say, did you how humble were your beginnings? Or were you a spoiled kid? Were you a poor kid? What?
No,
what?
Bro, I was seriously poor. That's why I'm so inspirational when I speak to younger kids. Nine of us grew up in a 3-room shotgun house in the backwoods of Mississippi. Mm-hmm. No inside plumbing with an outhouse. I know that sounds like the beginning of a joke, but that is so serious.
Mm-hmm.
Nine of us, mother, father, and seven kids.
You were just like in cots, or what was your sleeping?
Oh, man, we piled up on the floor, pallets, carts, whatever it took.
Yeah.
For many years, man, many years. Many
and then
years.
What turned it around? Did your dad start making a living?
No, what it was, parents instilled in us at a very early age, can't give you materialistic things, but what we're going to give you is an education and a firm belief in God. Those two things to carry you anywhere, and that's what has been the success for me, and a strange sense of humor, which has helped me throughout my lifetime.
Yeah. So we were talking the other day about Napoleon Hill. He's got a book called Think and Grow Rich.
Okay.
And a lot of self-help books.
Right.
So now you've owned several McDonald's. Now you're down to one.
Right.
What was it that took you on your journey? Was it networking? Like, what happened?
Well,
now
early on, like I said, my parents instilled in us at a very early age to be self-sufficient and take great pride in yourself and look for ways in improving your life. I've always been motivated, but early on in life, I read a book by Zig Ziglar called See You at the Top, and that was my beginning of positive thinking, and It put everything into focus as to what I wanted out of life and how to stay motivated and how to motivate other people. It was something I read one time. You get anything out of life you want by helping enough other people get what they want. Mm. You know, so that taught me to be humble. I will humble myself to people to get what I need from them. You know, and once you get what you want, you have to stay humble. So that way people buy into who you are and what you're doing. They believe in you. Can't be arrogant, not an arrogant bone in my body. Just take a lot of pride in who I am and what I do and what I've accomplished.
Now, I know this not based on your looks. I know this because I've heard you say that you're 60 years old.
60 years old, man. 60 years old.
So, okay, let's get more into brass tacks. Sure, okay. Positive thinking. Sure, okay. Blah, blah, blah. Bank accounts.
Okay.
Brass tacks.
Right.
What was it? Did you network? You said you were from a fraternity.
Well,
and
the thing
is
that along my way, there's been people that who helped me along my way. And the thing is this, if you project yourself, and this is the thing when I speak to kids, and I'm asked to speak to kids sometimes, I'm asked to do a form of motivational type speaking to at-risk kids. And I instill them to understand them, you are the company you keep. Surround yourself by positive people. Surround yourself by people who have more and know more than you. And somebody said something, I can't take credit for this, is that if you are the smartest person in your group, then you need to change the group.
Yeah.
And so you need to surround yourself from people that you can learn different things from. And that's what has helped me, surrounding myself with positive people, people that I admire, people that I want. And early on, and don't get me wrong, now early on I went through my gangster stage as a child where I rebelled and all that. You know, at one point in time, if I want something from somebody, I would hit them in the head and take it. You know, but then after I got to a point to realize this is not for me, and after a couple ass beatings by my parents, you know, they got me right on that. But the thing is this, if you see somebody who has something you want, you just talk to them, learn what they have and how did they get what you want, and just follow their blueprint. And then sometimes you have to alternate their blueprint because it may not fit you, your personality.
Who did you meet? Name names, Terry Scott. Who had five McDonald's?
When I decided to get into McDonald's, it was, nobody grows up in life saying, I want to get into McDonald's, okay? Nobody at all. And what happened to me was that McDonald's is my third career. Right out of college, I was in juvenile corrections. I was a counselor. After that, I got into credit and collections. I relocated from Mississippi to here. I got into credit and collections, okay? And after I got into credit and collections, that helped me make some money. But I was the only African-American in about 80 branches. You know, the corporate culture was not fitting for an African-American man. I was the only African-American man out of 80 branches. It was a prejudice company. Mm-hmm. Okay, and every goal they set for me, I met. My next step was to become a regional vice president, and it never happened. So I saved my money, and I just retired, took my money, and left them. Now, in the process, when I walked away from the company, I had already had a plan made up as to what I want to do. Now, I had a friend who was working for McDonald's as a manager. Not in the restaurants, but in corporate McDonald's. And he asked me, man, have you ever thought about getting into McDonald's? Have you ever thought about this? And I did my research. And McDonald's, a lot of people see fast food as being a dead-end job. I say there's no such thing as a dead-end job. They are dead-end people. You can excel at any job you want and make as much money as you want. McDonald's, I tell people this. McDonald's, when especially I read this, it got me excited. McDonald's has made more African-American millionaires than just about any other company. And the average...
What about the NFL?
Well, we ain't talking about that. We say company. Well, that's a little bit different. But anybody can take a job at McDonald's. It's one of the companies. You can take a job at McDonald's, and after 15, 20 years, if you save your money and work right and do the things money come, 20, 25, you can become an owner. You know, this is one of the few companies that you can go to work for and actually own a restaurant. So when I did my research, man, I'm saying I can do this. So I went in, went to the training program, worked for McDonald's for about a year and a half, no pay, just as a training, and the rest is what they say is history, man. So I've been rolling ever since.
Whoa.
Yeah.
So you also got into comedy.
Right.
And that's how I know you mainly. Right. I met you at Comedy Gumbo, I'm sure.
Right. And, well, the way I got into comedy, man, I've always been the class clown. But I was fortunate enough to be the class clown who was not clowning with the greats, because my parents didn't play that.
Right, right.
So what happened was, back in 2008, after Katrina, I was hanging out with some friends at Luce's on Chapatulas, and they were having a comedy show upstairs, so we're standing there drinking, so they said, well, let's go upstairs to the comedy show. So I went upstairs to the comedy show, and that night, it was some comedians on stage. They were horrible. And my friend was saying, hey, man, you know, they boost you up. You're better than they are. You're better than they are. So I said, okay, I'm going to come back. So I came back the next, I think Thursday? I don't forget what day it was. Next Wednesday to do the show, but the show had moved to the Howlin' Wolf Den. And so I started doing it every Wednesday for about 6 months. It was fun. You know, just like a lot of comedians, you started out doing jokes you read on the internet, jokes you heard other people tell. You know, and then you're still stealing other people's jokes. And then eventually you start writing your own shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and then I got this thing, what I said, I'm going to terrorize. I never really stole anybody's joke. I would terrorize it. You give me your joke, I'm going to take it and make it work for me. I'm going to change it and work it for me. So then in 2000, I did that for about 6 months. And then I just walked away from it for a while And then in 2010, one of my favorite comedians in the city, Tony Frederick,
I met Tony Frederick. Right. He's Corey Mack's neighbor.
Okay. Right. Right. Exactly. And what his dad owns a bar called Bullets. And he started doing a comedy show in 2010. And I stopped by there then. And I've been doing it consistently ever since 2010, at least once a week at least. And like I said, and I say this in my show, but people don't believe this, but it's the most sincere form of therapy for me. Right. And I'm having a great time. I know I'm not the funniest in the world, but I know I'm not the funniest in the world.
So you started when you were like 52?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In 2008. Okay.
Tried to do the math. Really.
Right.
What is
in
that?
In 2008 was that was 12 years ago? No, wait a minute. We both fucked up, man.
Well, 2005, right? Was 10 years ago,
right? So
plus
2003, right?
So 53,
right? And after that, and then I stopped for a while, and then officially I started back in 2010, you know, which was 5 years ago. So it's I was 55 then when I started back. So it's been fun, man.
Do you feel like you have a world of experience to pull from, or do you feel like you would have liked to have started younger so you would have had more technique? Do you feel like it's a blessing or a curse to start when you're 55?
Well, the thing is this. I don't take my comedy serious. Yeah, I don't. I know I would never get rich on it. I know I would never make a ton of money with it. I just do it for the fun.
Yeah.
You know, and that way it helps me to relax. It really helps me to relax more. Now, do I wish I would have started out a little bit sooner? Everything in due time. And I think it just hit me at the process of when it hit me at the time when I needed that in my life.
Yeah.
Okay, like I said, it was coming off of Katrina. It was just some things that looked mean to diversify in my life, to give me some alternative things to do. And it just came about at a time when I really needed it. So if I had started doing it sooner, I don't think I would have been enjoying it as much as I did. Because when I was younger, I was very, very laser focused. You know, anything I took on, I had to be the best at it. I had to, you know, I had to really excel at it. And I don't think I'm funny enough to where I would have excelled. Mm-hmm. And I probably just gave it up and said to hell with it and walked away from it frustrated. Whereas now, it's not as important in my life. It's not who I am. It does not make me. It's an aspect of me, you know, but it's like I say, it's my alter ego. Right. It gives me something that I get on stage and say things on stage that I could not normally say.
Right, right.
And you can tell by my stage name as to how seriously I take my comedy. When I call myself the set down comedian, you know, it's not because I tell my jokes set down. It's because after you hear my jokes, you're going to tell me to set my ass down.
So do you feel like that lowers the expectations to take the pressure off?
Exactly.
Takes the pressure off.
Now you can
have fun.
Now I have fun. Because I don't go on stage with anticipation of being a great comedian. I go on the stage just with the anticipation of having fun. I'm letting you know up front, I'm not there all that funny.
I'd like to counter that. I booked you on my show, Sunday Roast Battle.
Right,
with the Lonely
had a great Wheat. Time too with that one, man.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
appreciate
that was
it.
That was a great show too.
Yeah, it keeps building every time we do it. This we just had one yesterday, you know.
Okay, I didn't know about that.
It keeps. I'm sorry.
You had a show Sunday?
Yeah, just yesterday.
Man, I wish you had told me about that. That would have came out.
So, I mean, we have it once a month every third Sunday.
Did you do the Groupon this thing?
Yeah, man. Okay. Yeah, man. But I probably lost about $30. You know, I'm like, it's important to me to pay all the comics, you know? And it's like, if I say I'm going to pay everybody $10, even if I take in less than that, if I say it, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
So I feel like maybe they're going to get $5 next time. Right. But what I'm saying is... I mean, the show is great, though. The battles were great. It's, but I remember when you showed up with like 5 ladies.
Yeah, yeah. I have a nice little following.
What do you mean by that?
Well, that there are people that follow me on Facebook. There are people who follow me on Instagram, and so you know, my male friends. You know, women are your women female friends are a lot more loyal to you than your male friends. You know, and they I don't care how many times they heard the joke, they're gonna laugh as funny as the first time. First time,
especially because they know you got a cool couple million chilling in your bank account. Maybe that's why they're following you around.
Nah, little hussies. These are friends.
Little hussies.
Those have been friends before I had anything. And see, and that's that whole. That's that whole key too, man. If people, you can read through fakeness at all particular time. You know who's down for you and who's, you know, straight with you and who trying to dig in your pockets from that standpoint. And the other thing I was saying is that's why when you're talking about paying comedians, I don't take any pay. I've been offered some paid shows before, and I've actually done paid shows, but I don't accept money because to me that's too much pressure. You know, that's like, I got to be funny. Now you're paying, the people are paying to come in or paying, right, you're paying me. Now, one thing about it is that, you know, I have a nice reputation from a business standpoint here in the city. So lots of times I'm asked to MC shows, fundraisers, and things like that. And what people get from me is they get someone with some rank, some small amount of name recognition, but also someone to MC the show, to keep things moving, and then doing low moments, I'm also the entertainer. Mm-hmm. You know, I tell a few jokes, clean jokes, of course. Mm-hmm. I tell a few clean jokes.
I don't know how to do those. You gotta talk to me off air about that.
So I do some clean jokes, you know, and I do some clean jokes, and the clean jokes, you know, carry over. So people get two things in one. And I've had, one of my friends came to me one time, he asked me to host an event for him that was a fundraiser for his nonprofit organization. I said, man, you get me to do this because I don't charge, because I'm funny. He said, you funny too. So I know what that was about. But it, like I say, it's fun. I enjoy it. Yeah. And then when you could take comedy and help generate some money for people, you know,
it's a good thing. Do you have any aspirations to record a CD, record a special, put it out there?
I'm not to that point right now.
Maybe I'm not you're 65, saying 65. You know,
I'm not saying somewhere
5 years from now, put an hour together. You know,
yeah, I'm not saying somewhere down the road I won't. You know, but I have a lot of material. You know, I write a lot of things pop in my head, you know, and the thing is, too, I listen to comedy. I listen to other comedians. I listen to their style, their finesse, their delivery. I listen to how they writing technique. You know, I write a lot of comedy, but I have not put it on stage. Like, that's why I do open mics. You know, I have a set show that I do, but every now and then, I would insert maybe a new joke to get a feel for it, to see how it is, you know, because we all on stage, and I'm a better comedian with a larger crowd than a smaller crowd, because if I get one laugh, that motivates me, you know, all I need is one laugh.
Then you start feeling good.
Oh, yeah, and that motivates me going on. And the thing is, it's when the more people you have in an audience, it increases your odds of hitting somebody funny bone. You know, if you got three or four people in the audience and one of them from Russia and the other from Canada, you know, it's kind of hard to relate with your material. And, you know, and you don't, it's hard to hit either one of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, you stuck out. But that's the other key. I'm trying to get to the point, too, that I can have enough material that I can change it out when I walk in and see the audience. And that's one reason why I like doing open mic sometimes. You really don't know the racial mix-up of the audience, makeup of the audience. You don't know the financial makeup of the audience. So, you know, sometimes some jokes with one audience, man, they'll laugh their asses off.
Right.
They just, and but then you tell that same joke next week to a different audience, and it's crickets.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get to that point.
I know. It's like catching lightning in a bottle sometimes, you know? Where it's like, oh, I'll make these idiots laugh with this joke, and then that sucks, and you're like, oh, fuck. Like, I went to, like, my A material, you know?
Yeah.
I want to change the pace a little bit.
Okay.
You have a joke where you talk about Mississippi.
Right.
You're very connected in that town.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Your uncle's a sheriff.
No, my...
Your grand auntie's the mayor. You know the drug dealers. So what's going on in Mississippi? Is there a lot of, are you so well connected there?
Well, yes. I was born and raised in a very small country town called Woodville, Mississippi. And a lot of things I say about my upbringing and some things I joke on stage about my small city is correct, but I do embellish, you know, for the sake of humor,
right.
some other things.
How dare you lie on stage? How dare you?
I didn't say embellish. There's a difference, okay? There's a difference. But the key is to take what's there and to work with it and relate it to relate it in such a way that people find it humorous.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but most of the stuff, all the job titles I gave you except my nephew, you know, I just threw the nephew part in there, but all the things I relate to, it's the truth that takes place in Woodville. And that's where I grew up.
So if I get arrested in Woodville, Mississippi, mm-hmm. I gotta call you?
No, bro, you don't know.
How dare you?
I told you, ain't too much I can do. Everybody's still losing their job now. But once upon a time, I might have been able to help you, though.
Oh, okay, back in the day.
Yeah.
So you were in a fraternity?
Yeah, Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity.
What college?
Jackson State University. Mm-hmm. My fraternity was formed, one of the oldest African American fraternity was formed in 1906, Alpha Phi Alpha fraternity with the Black and Gold. And we started the whole procedure and everything from other African American fraternities and sororities started after we started. And I can tell you, Eric, going to college, two things that I contributed that made me the man who I am today that helped me to progress. One was to get a college degree. The other one was to pledge a fraternity. And not just any fraternity, but to pledge that particular fraternity, because it's like having brothers all around the world.
Right.
You know, somebody, frat handshake, frat sign, handshake. Ah. Oh, okay. Then you cool. You know, it's like having brothers all around the world. And it's someone, we all trying to help each other, to uplift the other, and whatever I can do, you know, to help. And that's what it's all about. And that taught me teamwork. That taught me how to get along. It taught me how to be humble and not be selfish. And just it just teaches you how to be.
How to think about other people in your fraternity. And then you can think about helping others. You can apply that to everything.
Right. And one of the main goals of our fraternity, manly deeds and scholarships. Manly deeds from the standpoint of doing things as a man to help other people. Mm. Regardless of race, color, creed, or religious background, economical background, financial background too. But the other thing, the scholarship, pushing education. And that's the key to anything. You know this. You're working on your master's, man. You know, the point is, and I tell the kids I speak to, they say, well, money is power. I say, no, money is not power. Knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
And someone can jack you, take your money, therefore they're taking power. But can't nobody can take what between years.
Mm-hmm.
So the more knowledge you got, the better off you are.
Mm-hmm.
So
let me ask you this. What kind of... Let's go behind the curtain of your fraternity.
Okay.
Were you beaten with a paddle? Did you have to suck an egg out of someone's asshole?
Eric, let me just say this. What used to take place with fraternities back during the good old days, it don't happen anymore. It does not have too many lawsuits and too many people getting injured. And over the course of many, many years, the thing that used to take place in the fraternities as part of the whole pledge period does not.
You have to pick up a greased up pig?
Let me just say.
When a pig is all lubed up, it is hard to get a hold on that squealer. Let me tell you something.
So part of it, like I said, part of it, man, is just, you know, those were the crazy days. But let me say this, though. But everything that you had to go through, with my fraternity, I can only speak for us. Everything that you had to go through as a pledge was something that was designed to test you. And a lot of times, it did not come to play. Say, for instance, they would keep us up all night sometimes. You know, just to the brink of you about to snap, 24, 48 hours. That came in great later on in life when you're trying to do homework or you got a job assignment. Or later in life, once you're on a job, you got a special project, you got to get, you know, a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
The other things were to making you run, making you jog. All that builds up your endurance, you know, help keep you in shape. So everything that was done to us, how do you say that was a method to the madness Oh, he's the other
one. Yeah, that's how you say that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm very skeptical. I've never been in a frat. My undergrad, I went to New School University. They didn't have a gym. They didn't have an intramural volleyball team.
So we it was were, all about academics then, huh?
Not really. It's all about pussy when I was there. Okay. But what, my point is, I don't know. I never had this experience, so I guess I'm jaded towards it, where I'm like, oh, you the only way you can be friends with somebody is if you know.
Right. But see, but let me say this. The conception between white fraternities and African American fraternities, it's totally different from the same thing, you know. And what has happened is the media and a lot of things with these frat boy parties and things the media has put out there, sometimes certain things too, it kind of misconstrued.
I also want to say I went to a Delta Sig frat party when I went to Temple University my freshman year.
Okay.
And there was a wet t-shirt contest, and I still masturbate to it. So there are some good parts.
So there was a good part that
there
you
There's some good parts. Thank you, Delta Sig, for those images.
That. Yeah, but the thing, Eric, is this, is that a lot of time people see a lot of the partying, right? And that's all they see. But when, just like I said, when you say it again, remove and go behind the curtain, fraternities do a lot of good things. You know, there's a lot of things that we donate money to, a lot of scholarships, a lot of things that we do in the community to help others, to uplift the race, to uplift different groups of people. So there's a lot of positive things that fraternities do. Now, don't get us wrong. We party now. We party. Mm-hmm.
You cut loose.
We have a good time. But it's a nice balance because we take care of our business, too.
All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, I don't know how much I could say about this. Or if you're going to cut me down, you're going to knock me out.
What's that?
That's a little bit of a Freemason. Can I talk about that?
I won't talk about that.
All right.
Okay.
rituals is fascinating to me.
Yeah,
this episode is going to be 132.
Okay.
My next episode is 133.
Okay.
And I'm going to earn a Freemasonic degree in my own head.
Okay.
Killing of the King. I'm going to take down somebody. The next episode will be called Bandit Hi-Ho, and you know what that's about. But anyway, I just want to, I'm going to earn my degree of Killing of the King.
Okay.
Anyway.
What's me?
That's pretty much all I have written down.
Okay.
Anything, so actually, it's interesting you were talking about all that picking yourself up by your bootstraps type of scenarios. Because before I had you on this episode, the earlier portion... I was talking to my friend Vidal Loazzo, and he has all these street kids that kind of like hang out with him. He's a mentor of them.
Okay.
And they hang out with him to get him off the street because, you know, two doors down from UNO, like right off campus.
Okay.
Like, we're talking about this area. Like, you know, some dad and his son were just shot in the head.
Wow.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And so they're literally kind of like holding on to... Vidal Loazzo is a great guy. He takes in kind of street kids.
Okay.
He shows them right. He speaks French. He speaks Spanish. You know what I mean? He takes them in. So what would you say to kids like that who are on the street or any kid who is just broke as hell, you know... What is, and you seem to do a lot of mentoring yourself.
Yeah, and the thing is this, too, and the big key is to evaluate kids and find out what they're lacking in life and where they are. And what I found out is this, is in order to get kids' attention sometimes, you have to sell yourself to them, okay?
What do you mean by that?
Well, what I normally do sometimes, if I find kids that are hungry, I feed them. Hmm. Okay, if I find kids that need someone to talk to, a ear to bend, then I listen to them. If they need a couple of dollars in their pocket, then I give them a couple of dollars. The thing is sometimes to get their attention. And once you get a child's attention, you can then proceed with helping them to progress to the different level. But you have to get their attention. Just like in a comedy show, you have to be able to relate to your audience. And kids are being your audience. You got to find that one or two things that gets their attention. And sometimes if they can see you and respect you, a lot of times when I tell kids where I come from, a lot of times when people think that you got something, they think you were born with a silver spoon in your mouth. A lot of people don't realize that sometimes you start lower than they do. And that's the first thing I tell with my employees or anybody I speak to. I say I challenge anyone in here to have started as horrible as I did growing up and back in Mississippi. 9 of us living in a 3-room shotgun house, no inside plumbing with an outhouse. Now, can anybody beat that? Mm-hmm.
Now, know? When you say 3-room, you mean the kitchen the counts as a living room.
Right.
Can that, the kitchen's one.
Right.
Maybe there's one bedroom, that's two, well, and the living room, that's right, three.
Right, that's three, and you sleep in the living room and the bedroom.
Oof.
You know, so that's what that all about. But in dealing with the kids, so yeah, get the attention. That's great that he's doing that. And, you know, I have kids that I mentor. And the thing is to expose kids. And that's what happened to me, too, that helped me along the way. When I was in school, you know, my teachers were my mentors. I connected with a man who, Thomas Tolliver, who later, I tell anybody, he was a turning force in my life. He was my mentor. And I pledged the same fraternity he pledged. We're best friends right now. And if anybody, and he got me into college. He convinced me, not that I wasn't going to college, but he took me, he showed me around, you know. So that's what I'm saying. That's having mentors, having someone that can reach out, mm-hmm. grab you, slap you upside the head, get mm-hmm. your attention, mm-hmm. and take you and show you a different life. And show you how you can get this different life.
Yeah.
Just like anybody else.
I remember, I want to give a shout out right now. Speaking of mentors,
right.
There's someone I want to talk about. Mm-hmm. Mimi Friedman. I worked on this crappy reality TV show.
You did? Okay.
Called Nashville Confidential. You know, I moved from Los Angeles
right,
here. I was working on reality shows.
Okay, I didn't know
that. I got fired from one. I was making $13.50 a week.
Okay.
I got that about three times, okay. and then I got fired.
Wow, okay.
And I was supposed to be on the show for 7 months, so wow. I was thinking I was good.
Right.
And then I was super not good, and I was super fucked in my life. But Mimi Friedman, she told me about getting her master's in writing.
Okay.
And it was something that just, I don't know, she planted this seed in my head where it gave me an alternative. All of a sudden I realized, if I get my master's in screenwriting, I can screenwrite for the rest of my life.
Right.
As a professor, and if I was a professor and a comic
right.
and a screenwriter, wow, that's three jobs.
Oh, man, I know.
That's three jobs. It just takes one person and just go, hey, what about that path? And
thank
then
you.
It might be a dark forest. It might be very dark, but you're like, hey, there's a silver star out there.
Yeah.
What if I chop through this woods to that one little idea that someone planted in your head? And you never know when that could be when you're in that opportunity to say that one thing to that one person.
And that's the key to the diversification. And that's what it is. You know, it's some people saying you need to be laser focused on one thing. But then again, too, if you could diversify, just like you are, it opens up so many different avenues available to you.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the great thing about it, just being able to see so many different things and to participate in so many other things. But it all goes back to writing. Some of your great comedians that I read about started out just writing. Even some of the best singers started out as songwriters. Some of the best joke tellers are the ones started out just writing jokes for everybody else. You know, like Paul Mooney, he's one of my favorites. And this is my claim to fame. 2 years ago, I was the MC and opening act for Paul Mooney when he came to the city for a couple shows when he was here. So that's my claim to fame. That was my first real touch with reality mm-hmm. from a famous standpoint, dealing with someone of that caliber. You know, but the thing was that
when you opened up for one person one time, did you become a megalomaniac, egomaniac?
No, not really. I was humble because I realized that I got that job not because I was that good. I was good, but because I didn't charge. You understand what I'm saying? I didn't charge, and then they were looking, and then the person who owns the facility where the show was recommended some comedians to him, and they selected me. Okay, but the point from that standpoint was that I did good. I got a lot of, you know, and that's when I really realized that I wasn't as bad as I think I am, you know, because even after the show, he came to me and said, you know, for an old man, you're pretty good. You know, I said, for an old man, thank you very much, Mr. Mooney, you know, from that standpoint. So, but the thing is that I realized, and this was a professional show. You know, people came out to see him, sure. but nobody booed me off stage. Nobody said, go ahead and get off stage. We waiting on Paul to come on, but that gave me some insight that if I really, really focus on what I was doing, that I could maybe mm-hmm. do something with it.
Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
That's another episode, the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Episode 132 with my main man, and my main motherfucker, Terry Scott. Hey, thank you so much for doing it.
Sit down, comedian, bro. All right, Eric. All that's right. It?
Hey, thanks a lot, buddy.
All right. Later. All right,
take care.
Wait a minute. What about, you don't see aliens and smoke pot?
Oh, smoke pot and worship aliens, everybody. Just in case you aren't doing either of those things, do both of them today.
All right.